Hi, my name is Shailesh Singh and you are listening to CardioAid. So today we'll be talking about the LAOS 3 trial. The cardioembolic strokes are responsible for approximately 20% of all ischemic strokes. The non-dramatic atrial fibrillation is the most common cause of cerebral embolism. And the presumed mechanism of stroke in this kind of cardioembolic stroke is thrombus formation in the fibrillating atrium or the atrial appendage with subsequent embolism. Thrombi in the left atrial appendage may account for majority of cardioembolic stroke in atrial fibrillation. The oral anticoagulants reduce the thrombus formation in left atrial appendage and have proven efficacious in preventing ischemic strokes in patients with atrial fibrillation. However, there are certain limitations with these oral anticoagulations, and which include non-adherence, non-compliance, underdosing, and poor time and therapeutic range for warfarin or other vitamin K antagonists. The LAOS 3 trial was conducted to evaluate the efficacy and safety of concomitant left atrial appendage occlusion in patients with history of atrial fibrillation undergoing cardiac surgery for another indication. Surgical left atrial appendage occlusion with other cardiac surgery in atrial fibrillation patients was a class 2B recommendation until now as per the 2019 ACC, AHA and HRS guidelines and 2016 ESC guidelines for atrial fibrillation. The LAOS 3 trial was a randomized multicentric trial and it enrolled patients who were more than 18 years of age who were scheduled to undergo cardiac surgery and had atrial fibrillation with a CHA2DS2 score of at least 2. So this CHA2DS2 score gives an adjusted annual risk of stroke in the patients with atrial fibrillation. On this score, patients can get a score of 0 to 9 and the parameters like cardiac failure, hypertension, age between 65 to 74 years, diabetes mellitus, presence of a vascular disease and female gender, these are given a score of 1. And stroke or TIA and age more than 75 years is given a score of 2. As the score of CHA2DS2 increases, the adjusted annual risk of stroke also increases. When the patient have a CHA2DS2 score of 0, their annual risk of stroke is 0. When the patients have a CHA2DS2 score of 1, adjusted annual risk of stroke is less than 1%. When the CHA2DS2 score is 2, the adjusted annual risk of stroke is approximately 2%. At score of 3, it is more than 3%. At score of 4, it is 4%. When the CHA2DS2 score is 6 or 7, the annual risk of a stroke is close to 10%. And when the score is 9, that is maximum, the annual risk of stroke is 15%. I'm quoting this data from Lip and colleagues. This is a famous data for CHA2DS2 score. This trial excluded the patients who were undergoing off-pump surgery, who had mechanical valve implantation, heart transplantation, or they were undergoing surgery for complex congenital heart disease, or were having isolated implantation of LVADs, or they had a previous cardiac surgery that involved opening of pericardium, or had previously undergone left atrial appendage closure by a device. Patients were randomized into two groups in 1:1 fashion by computer-generated randomization list. One group was supposed to undergo left atrial appendage occlusion and the other did not undergo the occlusion. Any of the techniques could be used for the left atrial appendage occlusion. It could be amputation and closure. It could be stapler closure. It could be double layer linear closure from within the atrium, or it could be closure with an approved surgical closure device. What the participants could not have was a percutaneous closure or purse string closure. If there was a thrombus present in atrial appendage, the thrombus was removed after the left atrium was opened. The participants were followed up by telephone or in person by a trained personnel at 30 days and every 6 monthly till the end of the trial, and at every 6 months they were questioned about the possible symptoms of stroke. All the patients, whether they were having LA appendage occlusion or they did not have LA appendage occlusion, received antithrombotic therapy, and the physicians who oversaw their antithrombotic therapy were unaware of their randomization. The primary outcome was the occurrence of ischemic stroke or a transient ischemic attack with positive neuroimaging or a non-cerebral systemic embolism. Strokes of undetermined origin were considered to be ischemic stroke, and the secondary outcomes included any stroke or non-cerebral embolism, ischemic stroke, non-cerebral systemic embolism, death from any cause, 30-day mortality, volume of chest tube drainage in first 24 hours, re-exploration for bleeding within 48 hours after surgery, and hospitalization for heart failure, myocardial infarction and major bleeding. A total of 4,800 participants from approximately 100 centers in 27 countries were randomized in the trial, and approximately 2,400 patients were assigned to left atrial appendage occlusion, and 2,400 patients did not undergo left atrial appendage occlusion at the time of cardiac surgery. The mean follow-up duration was approximately 3.8 years, and the follow-up was completed by close to 98% of the patients. Rest of the patients had been either lost to the follow-up or had withdrawn consent. The baseline characteristics of the patient population in both the groups, that is left atrial appendage occlusion group and non-occlusion group, were comparable. The mean age of the participants was 71 years, and two-thirds of them were males. The mean CHA2DS2VASc score was 4.2, and approximately half of the patients were receiving oral anticoagulants at the baseline. There was only minimal prolongation of cross-clamp time and mean cardiopulmonary bypass time in the patients who underwent left atrial appendage occlusion. That is, the patients in the occlusion group had a cross-clamp time of 86 minutes, and patient in no occlusion group had a cross-clamp time of 82 minutes. The patients in the occlusion group had a mean cardiopulmonary bypass time of 119 minutes, and patients in no occlusion group had a bypass time of 113 minutes. The chest tube output was 520 ml in the occlusion group and 500 ml in no occlusion group. The re-exploration rate for the patients who were in occlusion group was approximately 4%, and it was again 4% of the patients who did not undergo occlusion. At the time of discharge, 83% of the patients in the occlusion group were on oral anticoagulation, versus 81% patients in the no occlusion group. At 1 year, 80% of the patients in the occlusion group were on antithrombotic therapy, compared to 75% in the no occlusion group who were on antithrombotic therapy. At 3 years, 79% of the patients in the occlusion group were on antithrombotic therapy, versus 78% patients in the no occlusion group were on antithrombotic therapy. The ischemic stroke or systemic embolism occurred in 4.8% patients in the occlusion group and 7% patients in no occlusion group, and the p-value was highly significant, 0.001. In the first 30 days, a stroke and systemic embolism in both the groups, occlusion group and non-occlusion group, were not statistically different. It was 2.7% in the no occlusion group versus 2.2% in the occlusion group, and p-value was not significant. After the first 30 days, there was a significant difference in the stroke and systemic embolism rate in both the groups. It was 2.7% in the occlusion group and 4.6% in the no occlusion group, and the p-value was highly significant. It was 0.001. The trialists found that risk of stroke or systemic embolism was 33% lower with surgical occlusion than with the standard care after 3.8 years of follow-up. What they write is that among participants with atrial fibrillation and risk factors for a stroke, the risk of composite outcome of ischemic stroke or systemic thromboembolism was lower with concomitant left atrial appendage occlusion performed during cardiac surgery than without it. The number needed to treat to prevent one stroke over the period of 5 years was 37. This procedure could be performed without incurring any additional cost and without perioperative complications. Also, what they found was there was no significant increase in the risk of heart failure or major bleeding during the procedure. So why were they worried about this heart failure? This is because the left atrial appendage is a source of atrial natriuretic peptide, and there have been some papers which have shown that removal of the appendage may impair renal clearance of salt and water, thereby increasing the risk of heart failure. An important point to note here was that during the first 30 days, there was a relatively higher risk of stroke in both the groups. It probably means that a stroke in the early perioperative period are because of the surgery itself, that is because of the aortic manipulation or intracardiac manipulation, and procedures like left atrial appendage are not likely to be effective in preventing these kind of strokes. An important point to note here is that anticoagulation was continued in both the groups, in the occlusion group as well as in the non-occlusion group. An important point to note here is that Laos 3 trial did not compare left atrial appendage occlusion with anticoagulation. It is not testing anticoagulation versus left atrial appendage occlusion, surgical left atrial appendage occlusion. The benefits seen in the occlusion group were due to the super additive effects of two embolism preventing strategies. Surgical occlusion of the left atrial appendage reduces the risk of stroke by a mechanism different from that of the oral anticoagulants, and therefore it is a super additive effect that we are getting here. This trial is an important step forward as far as the embolic stroke prevention is concerned. The trial also generates a hypothesis that can percutaneous endovascular device occlusion of the left atrial appendage be also effective as a complement to anticoagulation. Till now, we have only been testing left atrial appendage occlusion as an alternative to oral anticoagulation, but if they can be used as an adjunct to oral anticoagulation is yet to be seen. It is important to remember that there is difference between surgical occlusion of the left atrial appendage and the percutaneous left atrial appendage occlusion. Surgical occlusion is an extravascular procedure
Whereas the percutaneous procedure is an endovascular procedure. Any endovascular procedure is going to increase the risk of thrombus formation and embolism. The trialists concluded that the surgical left atrial appendage occlusion performed as a concomitant procedure on a background of anticoagulation was beneficial. After the trial, what we know is that surgical left atrial appendage occlusion should be performed at the time of other cardiac surgery in the patients with atrial fibrillation and CHA2DS2 score of at least 2, and anticoagulation should be continued in these patients. What we do not know after this trial is that should left atrial appendage occlusion be done for atrial fibrillation undergoing cardiac surgery with CHA2DS2 score of 0 to 1. This trial did not include the patients who were having a CHA2DS2 score of 0 to 1. And also that should left atrial appendage occlusion be done for patients with high CHA2DS2 score without atrial fibrillation. So interesting times are ahead in this field of left atrial appendage occlusion and prevention of embolic stroke in patients of atrial fibrillation. This was the Laos study published in the NEJM of June 2021. Thank you everyone for listening.
Hi, my name is Shailesh Singh and you are listening to CardioAid. So today we'll be talking about the Flower MI trial, which was published in May 2021 edition of NEJM. So what we know is 50% of patients with acute ST segment elevation MI have multivessel disease. What we already know is that preventive PCI or performing the complete revascularization in ST segment MI patients decreases the rate of cardiac death and non-fatal MI and subsequent angina. The current guidelines recommend complete revascularization in the setting of STEMI. The 2018 ESC guidelines of the myocardial revascularization gave a class 2A recommendation for routine revascularization of non-infarct related artery in a patient of multivessel disease before discharge. Four randomized controlled trials have already shown the benefits of complete revascularization in patients with ST segment elevation MI with multivessel disease. These four trials include the PRAMI trial, Culprit trial, DANAMI 3' multi trial, and COMPARE acute trial. One thing I'd like to mention here is the complete revascularization is recommended in patients of ST segment elevation MI except in the setting of cardiogenic shock. The DANAMI 3' multi trial and COMPARE acute trial have shown that in patients of ST segment elevation MI with multivessel disease, FFR decreased the composite of death, MI and revascularization, and this was primarily driven by decrease in repeat revascularization. Death and MI were similar in both angiography group and FFR group in both the trials. What we clearly understand from these data is that FFR decreases the rate of repeat revascularization in patients of ST segment elevation MI with multivessel disease. What is still unknown is whether FFR guided approach in such patients improve clinical outcomes compared to the angio alone. Flower MI trial was a multicentric randomized open label trial which was conducted from December 2016 to December 2018 in France. Patients of ST segment elevation MI who were more than 18 years of age and had undergone successful PCI of infarct related artery. Infarct related artery PCI could be primary PCI, rescue PCI, or a pharmaco-invasive PCI were enrolled in the trial. A successful PCI was defined as TIMI score of more than or equal to 2 or residual stenosis less than 30% for a culprit lesion. The patient had to have a major epicardial coronary artery or a major side branch more than 2 mm in diameter with at least one lesion of more than or equal to 50% stenosis. Patients were excluded if they had single vessel disease or they had hemodynamic instability, had previous cardiac surgery, or had coronary artery calcification, or they were having CTOs, or they had failed culprit lesion PCI, or the patients were referred for CABG. Patients were randomized to undergo complete revascularization guided by either FFR or angiography. In the FFR group, the FFR was measured if the visual estimation revealed a stenosis of more than or equal to 50%, and FFR of less than or equal to 0.8 was considered clinically significant. Although the protocol encouraged the complete revascularization during the index procedure, more than 95% patients ended up having a separate stage procedure for complete revascularization. The follow-up was conducted during an OPD visit, which was scheduled at 30 days, then at 6 months, then 12 months, and then 30 months after primary revascularization. If the patients could not attend the OPDs for any reasons, then the patients were contacted by mail or telephone. The primary outcome was a composite of death from any cause, non-fatal MI or unplanned hospitalization leading to urgent revascularization at 1 year. The secondary outcomes included
procedure time, total amount of contrast used, and individual components of the primary outcome, like any revascularization, urgent or elective, urgent revascularization of any non-culprit artery, rehospitalization for angina or heart failure, any rehospitalization in the cardiology department, and functional class as per the Canadian classification of the angina. Number of anti-anginal drugs and cost effectiveness were analyzed. A total of 1170 patients, that is close to 1200 patients with STEMI and multivessel disease, were enrolled in the study, out of which close to 600 got enrolled in the FFR group and close to 600 got enrolled in angiography guided group. The baseline characteristics of the patient population in both the groups were comparable. Mean age of the patient was 63 years, 15% of the patients were females in both the groups, approximately 45% patients in both the groups were hypertensive, approximately 18% of the patients in both the groups were diabetic, dyslipidemia was present in approximately 40% patients, less than 10% of patients had history of previous myocardial infarction, approximately 10% patients had history of previous PCI. When the location was infarct was analyzed, it was found that approximately 60% of the patients had inferior volume I and roughly one-third patients had anterior volume I. And on the angiography, approximately three-fourths of the patients had double vessel disease. The median left ventricular ejection fraction in both the groups was 50%. Approximately 66% patients in the FFR guided group had PCI, as compared to 97% patients in the angiography group received PCI. The mean number of stents for non-culprit lesion was 1.01 in the FFR group, whereas it was 1.5 in the angiography guided group. Drug-eluting stents were used in 99% of all the patients. What the trialists found was, among the patients with ST segment elevation MI with multivessel disease who had undergone successful PCI of the infarct-related artery, an FFR-guided strategy for complete revascularization was not superior to angiography-guided strategy for reducing composite primary outcome, which was death, non-fatal MI, and unplanned hospitalization. The individual components of this primary outcome, as well as the other secondary outcomes that are discussed previously, did not differ between the two groups. If you recall, you'll remember that Danami 3 Primalty trial and Compare Acute trial had shown that in patients with ST segment elevation MI with multivessel disease, FFR had reduced the composite of death, MI, and revascularization. However, this was primarily because of decrease in repeat revascularization. The results are in complete contrast with the FAME study. The FAME trial found that in patients with stable CAD, there was a lower incidence of major adverse events when FFR was used as compared to the angiographic PCI at 1 year. The results of FAME trial are completely different from this Flower MI trial. This could be because of the difference in the type of patient enrolled in both these studies. The FAME trial included the stable CAD patients, and this Flower MI trial included the acute coronary syndrome or the ST segment elevation MI patients. The FFR may not be a very good investigation for patients with ST segment elevation MI. Why? Because the natural history studies have already shown us that most of the ACS, it results from rupture or erosion of thin fibrous cap which overlies an atherosclerotic plaque. And there are often such several plaques in the entire coronary tree in patients with ST segment elevation MI. A plaque at high risk of occlusion need not be obstructive to flow. For example, if we look at the data from the PROSPECT trial, there were total 106 non-infarct artery lesions which were determined to be responsible for subsequent serious cardiac events in follow-up of patients of acute coronary syndrome. And in these patients, mean angiographic stenosis was only 32%. Patients with STEMI may have multiple ruptured plaques that have little effect on flow. Therefore, they are underestimated by FFR in their potential to cause subsequent MI or cardiac death. It was encouraged in the trial that the patients undergo complete revascularization during the index procedure only. However, more than 95% patients in the trial ended up having stage revascularization. Now, there are advantages and disadvantages of having this stage revascularization in patients with MI. The advantages of the complete revascularization during the index procedure are that patient is spared from a second procedure and all its adverse effects. And at times, the second procedure will be undertaken and no intervention will be performed if FFR is non-significant. So this Complete revascularization during index procedure spares the patient the second procedure. However, there is a disadvantage which comes with complete revascularization during the index procedure, and this is that revascularization and FFR assessment during the index procedure might not be the best idea. Because of the vasospasm, it can increase the stenosis severity, leading to an overestimation of stenosis severity assessment. The validity of FFR in the patients with acute MI, especially acute anterior wall MI, is debated. Based on the results of this trial, either an FFR-guided or a CAG-guided revascularization strategy are acceptable choices for management of residual CAD after primary PCI in patients with ST segment elevation MI with multivessel disease. We were talking about FLOWER MI trial published in May 2021 edition of NEJM. Thank you for listening.